The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
We're talking spring news, TGFBI, and our do not draft players on Underdog Best Ball here on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are sponsored by Fantrax, the most customizable free commissioner service in fantasy sports, and Underdog Fantasy, home of the biggest best ball contests in the industry. Clay Link here with Todd Zola. Great to be back on with you, Todd. And you're on location in Florida. So thanks for, even though you're traveling, doing the pod, and I know you're getting set for AL Labor tomorrow. Were you able to catch any games down there in Florida?
Yeah, I'm in West Palm Beach. Was able to get to Jupiter on Tuesday night, see some Red Sox and, who was it, Miami. And then on Wednesday, I was at West Palm for some Red Sox in Houston, kind of seeing a pattern here. And yesterday, I got to hang out with the one and only Ron Chandler, his fifth row behind the home plate seats at the Mets Stadium, Port St. Lucie. And we caught the Mets. And who was the Mets? Who beat the Mets? It'll come to me. Oh, the Braves. The Braves. The Braves beat the Mets. So, yes, I've seen the pitch clock in action. I've seen violations. I've seen Ron was telling me all about Max Scherzer and how he plays with the batter's heads as far as the clock goes. Did not get to see that in action.
Yeah, you know, it seems like the pitch clock may work in Scherzer's favor. Talked a lot about how pitchers adjusting to the pitch clock. Seems like hitters having a little trouble too. And with a guy who's forcing the issue like Scherzer, it just makes him all the more difficult.
Sometimes you force your own, you see what you want to see, right? And to me, it looked like some of the hitters looked a little rushed. And I don't know if this is going to be the case. I don't know how much it's going to matter to us, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see more first pitch takes just because the batter isn't kind of in his routine yet. Mm-hmm. And he may need that first pitch to get, because he needs to get in the box and be ready or he gets a called strike. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see some first pitch takes more than normal, and then you're kind of in your routine in the box, in and out. What I do know is, having watched it and having the batter need to be ready at 8 seconds, Nomar would be about halfway through the first glove by the time he needed to be in the box. So I do think it's going to take a little bit of getting used to. And if a guy was buzzed and, he kind of did he kind of had a little bit of walk around, collect themselves, the timer, it gave him a few seconds to kind of collect themselves. So, what if that was a strategy, was to buzz a guy to get him back in the box 15 seconds late,
I saw that with Ben Joyce. Like, he threw one high and inside, and then the guy had to get back in a hurry. And
well, the umpire gave him a beat. So maybe there was a, they saw that. And they didn't. Yeah, they don't want that to be, you don't want to throw up and in as a strategy to get more. You know what I mean? So maybe they collected that. I don't know, but it's going to take getting used to. The other thing to keep in mind too is the clock, I think, is here to stay, but the timing, they could add 5 seconds. I think that could change.
I think they could add 5 seconds.
Yeah, if they if they feel the quality of the game is detracted with batters having to get in so quickly, I think they may, whatever, it's a work in progress, and we'll just have to see.
I am glad that I won't have to watch guys like Nomar, Garcia Parra adjust their batting gloves 50 million times. But players are such creatures of habit, and they're not just they're not superstitious, but players are a little stitious. And their routines, you know, getting thrown off may affect them a little bit.
It's just to get out of the routines. And I think that it's easier for a pitcher to figure out his routine than I think for a batter. I think the pitcher can probably change his – I mean, we know that Luis García from Houston is going to have to change his motion because not so necessarily the time clock, but they're looking on box and he doesn't – his motion went from the windup is – kind of illegal.
Yeah, Kevin it'd be Gausman, a balk now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kevin Gausman is going to have to change his motion. Then there's the Kenley Jansons who are already working in the bullpen to work faster.
So, yeah, those are adjustments. But I think the point you're making of hitters having to adjust.
Yeah.
Maybe something we haven't really thought about as much.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the pitchers will make their adjustments because that's all they do. You know, I mean, they have to do it 100 times a game, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas a batter only does it 4 or 5 times a game. So I think the batters, I think most of the batters will, but we'll see. I mean, there's going to be someone who's messed up in the head and we don't know who it is. And I'm probably going to draft them.
Yeah. Some of those routines will get thrown off a little bit and it'll be a year of adjustments on both sides. Well, Todd, big news yesterday, not even news, honestly, but the big kind of talking point, let's say, in the fantasy world yesterday was that Corbin Carroll triple that you may have seen. Absolutely incredible speed he flashed. He stumbled across first base and still easily had a triple. Our buddy Rob Silver was saying, hey, you know, main events, this could be a guy who's going at the 2-3 turn. And look, Rob doesn't usually miss on these. And while that may seem like an overreaction, it's that speed, I think, that Carroll brings to the table that those players in the overall contest will be chasing. And 2-3 turn doesn't sound crazy to me.
I don't think it is. That's where I initially had him ranked. And wow. I was like, and that's because the translations put him around that point, the MLEs. I'm like, there's just no way. And mm-hmm. I had to calm it down a little bit, interject a little of my own, you know, bring it back. We're going to talk TGFBI in a little bit. I got him in every one of my first few TGFBI drafts. Then I said, you know, I got to start to, you know, get a few other players in Corbin Carroll, and his ADP jumped in the underdog. So I backed off a bit, but yeah, it's more number scouting than me. Our friend Eric Cross is all over him as far as having seen him play. Several other scouts are very high on him. But the translations are just silly. If he can hit left-handed pitching, he's going to be a difference maker. And you're right. I do think, and I kind of, the reaction to 2-3 turn was like, I'm not so much for me getting him, you know, getting him because I'm not going to pay that price. I'd rather wait a little longer and push up a Jake McCarthy than push up the Corbin Carroll.
That's interesting because I'm kind of on the other side on McCarthy. Maybe I just need to turn that stone over again and really dive into it, but I feel like he's being overdrafted.
I don't know for sure. I need to once gambling in Massachusetts is legal in a week or so, I'm going to look around to try to find a Jake McCarthy leading the NL in steals prop. Hmm. I'm not saying like it's going to happen, but the possibility is there. The thing with McCarthy, maybe this is where you're edging, is the Diamondbacks. Well, Gurriel's going to play. I mean, but they're still pretty left-handed, and they may end up platooning one of the outfielders, and just to give an outfielder some more run. It may be McCarthy that loses some playing time against Southpaws and not Carroll. So maybe that's where you're coming from, that he's being overdrafted for a platoon player, and he probably is. But the steals he may give are, you know, again, we're talking 6 or 7 or 8 rounds difference, maybe even more than that. I can mm-hmm. check my TGFBI board and find out where and remind myself where McCarthy's going. But all I'm saying is relative to each other, I'd rather get McCarthy at that price than Carroll at his.
I got Carroll in the 5th round of TGFBI, but I think that's the last time I'll be having a chance at Carroll in the fifth. So just beware that if you want the guy, you're going to have to get aggressive. Another youngster making a little bit of waves in the fantasy world, Jordan Walker. Now, Todd, I know you don't have a crystal ball, okay? But if you had to guess right now, and I'm making you guess, how do you see this Cardinals outfield situation shaking out over the next few weeks? Do you think Walker forces his way onto this team?
Do I look like Brian Walton?
Yeah, he would be the guy that asked for Cardinals info.
Jake McCarthy went in the sixth by Ray Murphy.
Oh,
wow. Carroll went in the fourth to Nick Pollock in my TGFBI. The best I can do for you, Clay, is say that everybody that I've listened to and asked says he's going to get an opportunity, Walker, is going to get an opportunity to take the spot. Whether he gets it or not remains to be seen, but he is going to get every opportunity to win a full-time outfield spot for the Cardinals. And it, from people telling me, is it's more about the glove. It's more about can he handle the defense. And keeping in mind, the Cardinals are – they care about defense as much, if not more, than any other team. So it's at left field. They just put – it's like, you know, not like a Manny Ramirez, which – my, yeah, geez, my examples, you really date myself. You see how old I am by the, some of the – you know, by you know, some of the
players.
It's
not too dated.
Examples. But – Manny Ramirez. But the point being, if he can handle it defensively in left field, they're probably going to let the bat, you know, let him grow into the bat.
I mentioned this on XM with Jeff Erickson today, but Jeff Jones, beat writer, Cardinals beat writer for the Bellevue News Democrat, made a good point on Twitter that, you know, they could have buried him in the lineup. Jordan Walker had him DH and then talked about him needing reps when time came to cut down on the roster, but they've done the opposite. And so the way things are trending, you know, still don't know, but it looks like maybe Jordan Walker will be on that opening day roster. Then it boils down to, you know, is Dyl Carlson the odd man out then? Do they trade Tyler O'Neill or somebody?
Yeah, well.
A lot up in the air for St. Louis.
This, I think the whole DH thing, you know, they want a place for Juan Yepes is bad.
Yeah, Yepes is a guy kind of always forget about.
Yeah, so that you know, and I think the reason you just don't put Carroll at DA, Jordan Walker at DH. First of all, I mean, he's a pretty good athlete, you know, coming from third base. I think they feel he can play the outfield, but if they want him to develop as a ball player, just putting him in DH to get the bat in the lineup, I think they want the glove too. I heard an interview with the Cardinals and Jim Bowden on the MLB Network Radio and Danny Wexelman, I believe, a couple nights ago. And they were saying that Newpar could play center. I mean, they don't know who's going to play where yet. They're going to give everybody a good long look. They're losing a lot of players to the WBC, but they're going to do the best they can, and nothing is really set in the card. I mean, they kind of know the guys that are fighting for the positions, but where the end – I mean, O'Neill can play center too. So you would kind of know the principals, the usual suspects, but where they align in, I don't know that matters so much for fantasy. We know these guys are going to play. We don't really care where O'Neill plays, although, I mean, some leagues have that, right, have the specific left, right, center, but the vast majority of leagues, it's just outfield.
True. It just seems like one guy could get squeezed, or maybe there's something, another shoe to drop here if Walker does indeed make the roster. He's leading off today for St. Louis, so they are giving him a real look.
You say you don't want to trade Dylan Carlson for Juan Soto, but yet he could be the odd man out. It's just the way things work out, right?
I hope that report's not true, at least
for the Cardinals. It's not a one for one. It was just in the pack.
Yeah, true. That's hard to fathom, even 6 months. It was hard to fathom at the time when that report came out, but even more so 6 months after that deadline. I was up this morning early, Todd, inputting spring lineups. It's kind of funny, you know, spring lineups, the early ones come out at about 7 a.m. Central Time. So we have people up early inputting those and confirming.
Wouldn't it be cool if it was your job to like tell the teams what their lineup was going to be?
I'd love to fill out the lineup.
So you set the lineup for all these teams at 7 in the morning. That would be good.
Well, we appreciate all the beat writers who are up that early. That's even earlier, you know, Arizona time. I guess most of those early ones are Florida, but we appreciate them reporting those because, yeah, we get them into the admin and confirmed for all of our users. First thing I noticed this morning was Alex Bregman was making his debut. So he had a fractured finger last offseason, or in the World Series, I should say. Slow played this spring, but ready to make his debut. I have him 71 overall. I'm just kind of wondering if I made this comparison on the XM with Jeff. Like, it almost feels like a Paul Goldschmidt at this time last year. Now, Goldschmidt runs, so that's not really part of Bregman's game. But do you kind of feel like Bregman's being undervalued at large here?
No. I am the anti-Bregman. Okay. Goldschmidt hits the ball hard. Alex Bregman doesn't.
Alex Bregman's plate skills are unreal, though.
Yeah, but that's fine. You know, so he patiently hits the ball at a medium exit velocity. He is built for Minute Maid, but as long as he's still in, it's one of those. Well, he's a Coors Field guy. Well, he's still in Coors, so you want him. He is built for Minute Maid. He's still in there, so he's still going to produce. But I worry. Now that he's no longer running, if I'm not in an OBP or a points league, I have no interest. And I have this argument with Derek Van Riper every year when we draft our NFBC team that drafts before the season ends. He's a Bregman guy. I'm not. I think last year we won, and we actually ended up with Bregman because he finally fell to a round where it's like, hey, Derek, you can take him here if you want. He's like, okay, we will. But, yeah, it's a batted ball data. He is so reliant on the Crawford boxes that I kind of want my player to have skills that go beyond needing the park. And here I am going to be drafting Adam Duvall in AL labor because the park's built for him. So, you know, it goes both until my argument doesn't meet my narrative, then the narrative's true until it doesn't make my case.
Well, look, I think it's good to get kind of the other opinion on Bregman because I've been pushing him up a little bit, and just because there's a drop off at third base there, the play skills are so steady, and I kind of feel like we all look at him and see no real upside, but with those Crawford boxes, maybe there is a little sneaky.
I think the upside is the fact that the floor is so high.
Yeah, he doesn't really need it when you got that kind of floor, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, it's weird.
Third base just gets ugly after him.
You're usually the upside guy, and I'm usually the floor guy, and we're kind of flipped.
Yeah, we're kind of flipped on Bregman, but it's good to hash that out because, yeah, just kind of feels like he's kind of in this dead zone between tiers of third baseman, and it feels like he'll, in my opinion, he'll probably go closer to that front or the closer earlier tier than the later tier of third
baseman. Just sitting up my tiers. Let's see where if I can figure out where. Where I have Bregman ranked relative to any the other players. I actually only done AL only. Where do I see him? Man, I don't see him. So if I'm not looking up high enough, it must. Oh no, you know what? In a mixed league, I've got Bregman as the in between Arenado and Gunnar Henderson.
Oh, so you have him ahead of Henderson? Okay, yeah.
The one spot. It's a buck. It's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th, and if you put Witt at shortstop, I have him as the sixth highest third baseman. But I think you're right as far as drop-off goes, because next on the list is Josh Rojas, Eugenio Suarez, and Cabrian Hayes, mm-hmm. who aren't bad players, but I think that's a pretty decent drop once you get
as people, Bregman. I think as people draft and stare into that abyss at third base, people will kind of push Bregman closer to that earlier tier, just looking at the
they're
remaining
definitely
option.
Doing with an Arenado. I mean, I have Arenado just one click ahead of Bregman, but he's being pushed up closer to Austin Riley.
I feel like maybe there is some upside still remaining, but as you said, you don't even really need it with the floor being so high on Bregman, the context, the Crawford boxes.
When I think of upside, I think of a skill popping. The upside for Bregman is if he just luckily pulls a few more fly balls and ends up with more homers.
Yeah, maybe he chips in a five bags or so.
He could. And you know what? With the new rules, I haven't looked at Bregman yet, but with the new rules, he might. Maybe. He's a heady player, so maybe he'll figure it out.
Well, we got a few other spring notes to touch on, but real quick, a word from one of our sponsors on the podcast, Underdog. Fantasy baseball season is underway, and there's no better place to play than Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy baseball. Right now, Underdog has MLB best ball tournaments live, including the Dinger, which I've played a few and super fun. Dinger has a $500,000 pot in total prizes. In best ball, all you do is join a contest, draft your team, and that's it. There are no waivers, no trades, and no in-season management. Draft 20 rounds of players and get the best cumulative scores in your starting lineup. Three pitchers, three infielders, three outfielders, and one flex each week of the regular season. Getting started is simple. Go to underdogfantasy.com, sign in with the promo code RWMLB, and not only will Underdog double your initial deposit up to $100, but you'll also get 6 months of our RotoWire subscription for free. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy, promo code RWMLB. Draft your $100,000 Dinger team today. We'll be talking a little bit more about Underdog later in the show with our Underdog segment. And the topic today was do not draft players on Underdog, which I found are, you know, my do not draft players are harder to come up with than my favorite sleepers. So it's kind of a tough list for me to come up with. But I got five, and we'll get Todd's picks for do not draft later in the show. And those are Underdog specific, by the way. But Todd, I wanted to talk a little bit about Jared Kelenic. You probably don't want to talk much about him, but look, he's another surgery. He's got three homers already. He had another one Wednesday. AL labor with, you know, you and James and Jason Collette and all these great minds, including multiple from RotoWire. Really interesting to see how the field treats Jared Kelenic, because it's still going to have a lot of skeptics, but maybe he's swaying some people. Would you consider yourself more toward the skeptic side, or is he starting to maybe win you back, or at least get you sniffing around again, Jared Kelenic?
I'm not anti-Jared Kelenic, and he would be somebody that I would be interested in, different time, different place. Labor, it's an auction, and I'm going to have some certain targets that I'm going to go after, and if it goes too high, I will drop, but I will get the second to last bid in, and I don't know that I'm going to have the capital, the budget to pay what I think is going to cost for Kelenic with his recent surge. And it's just the kind of, I think people are going to be looking where I'm going to be drafting my upside elsewhere. I think people will be into him. He's too good not to figure it out, but he's just been historically terrible. You know, it's kind of one of those things where it's something's got to give, if you will. And I think he will be fine. The other thing about labor is it's old school in that there's a reserve, but you can't just, oh no, Kelenic's in a slump. I'm gonna put him on the bench until he snaps out of it and I'll activate him. You can't do that in labor. You have to play through the bumps, play through the Colorado starts if you're in the NL. You could drop him, you can just release him, and then someone can pick him up for fab. But if he's active in the MLB, he needs to be on your roster.
Yeah, so if he struggles again, you have to eat all that. And that actually, last time I was in labor, I had to do that with Kelenic. And it hurt. I was wrong on him as a prospect coming up, but this feels like this is now like post-hype hype. Like, he doesn't even fit into the post-hype sleeper anymore. He's kind of got the post-hype. He's a post-hype surger.
He's just 23. I mean, he's not even that old. You can only have one post before your name at his age.
True. I like what I'm seeing here, and I like, you know, the results are the results. It's spring training results, whatever. But I like his attitude so far. I just saw some quotes that he's trying to win every pitch. Yeah, it sounds great. But, you know, maybe he was a little overly confident in his abilities when he came up. And just being in that moment and taking it pitch by pitch is how you have to do it. You can't be thinking about, you know, the larger picture when you're in the batter's box. You have to just be in the moment, and it feels like he's there. It's Peter Gammons. You know, say what you will about how in touch he is with things right now, but he mentioned on Twitter that he believes that the Mariners emphatically believe Kelenic's beginning his takeoff. So I'm expecting him to get maybe not really pricey, but probably crack the top 200 in some drafts.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I grew up with Peter Gammons, and maybe he lost a little off his fastball, but he's still the man to me. You know, respect,
I still like
aspect
him a lot,
of it.
I didn't know you grew up with him.
Well, I mean, Boston. That's where he. Yeah. That's where he, I mean,
did you
the
know
Boston
the guy?
Notes? the notes, the Gammon's notes were second only to USA Today. And
I still have a lot of respect for him.
Survived a stroke, and he's a rock and roller. Seen him play at the Hot Stove Cool Music that he have in Boston. They have it in Chicago too with Theo.
Oh, that's
Theo
cool.
Plays Rocking Through the Free World. Neil Young, Theo can play that blindfolded every year. Rocking in the Free World by Theo Epstein. Anyway, but just being silly.
I'd love to get Peter Gammon's Theo Epstein and maybe Bronson Arroyo into a band.
Arroyo played.
He's
a grunge guy, though. I mean, he played acoustic. Acoustic sounds really good, but he's a grunge guy. And I stopped listening to music when grunge became the form of alternative in the early 90s is when I kind of stopped, and I started listening to my old stuff again.
I hear you, man. I'm already reaching that point where I can't really listen to new stuff. It's
I know I'm missing
pretty much revisit the 90s, early 2000s. Yeah. Well,
I'm missing some new stuff, but whoa, Jazz Chisholm hit a home run. Nice. Okay, good.
Nice. Well, that's boost him up a couple of rounds. I kid, of course. Jose Miranda, Todd, skipping out on the WBC, I'm kind of just wondering what your concern level is here. Could be limited to first base, DH, early on. As long as he's playing, should be okay. But given that he did skip the WBC as a result of this and not able to play third, do you worry a little bit about Miranda's shoulder?
I was unaware. I've been traveling this week, was unaware that he had an issue because I like Jose Miranda as a player based upon the underlying, StatCast type metrics. And my big thing is I don't care about average exit velocity. I care about average exit velocity on fly balls because that drives power. And there's too much – I don't want to say – there's a little bit of happenstance involved. The harder you hit the grounder ball, the better chance of getting hit, especially without a shift. But it's all about the fly ball exit velocity. And he was among the leaders. And I was like, whoa. Mm-hmm. So he didn't quite get credit for it in the home run column that he should have. I thought it was coming. I guess the fact that he is hitting and is playing first base is, I think you can't get too down. It sounds like it's the throwing motion more than anything else. But and when we talk underdog in a little bit, I'm sure one of us is going to use the word injured and maybe the word not before it. And, do I take him in underdog because there's a possibility that this grows into something more. So if that means that I'm concerned, I guess I do. But I'm okay with the fact, if I'm a keeper list and I got Miranda, the fact that he can still hit is optimistic.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was really excited. I'm maybe lowering him like a few spots in the overall list, but not a ton until this, affects his availability at the plate. Then I might have to get serious. But arbitrary endpoint alert. After the start of May, he hit 268, 325, 426 with 15 homers. So really that bad first month was really the only time he had significant struggles, Miranda.
Yeah, and he should have even had more power than he did.
Yeah, and I think he got sent down, and then he was called up right away the next day after Royce Lewis got hurt. And maybe it was a comfort thing, now that he had a leash, he finally found a little bit more comfort and found himself in the box. But, I know you got to look at the whole picture, but I just was really impressed with how he turned the page on those early struggles, Miranda, and found himself last season. Will Myers was back in the Reds lineup today. Todd, I don't really want to draft Will Myers. Any case at all, aside from the park, would you draft Will Myers?
Yeah, and I did. I'm looking up the round right now. You're going to cringe. But I got him in the 12th round of the TGFBI.
In a 15 teamer, that's not crazy, but
it's a little crazy. but I'm in a draft where there's some. I know people know what I know my lists, and my lists are he's pretty aggressive. And even though it's TGFBI NFBC format, this is a go get him. Go get, don't people are dicking their guy when they want him. As I mentioned before, Ray Murphy took Jake McCarthy in the sixth. I joked to him. I said, he picked him right after I picked, made a pick. I was like, I thought my McCarthy sweat would last more than one pick. But, you know, Ray wanted him, Ray got him. So,
Will Myers sounds like he's kind of one of your guys then.
He is. And it's the park, and I think he can run. And I think the Reds will let him run. And if he doesn't play the whole season, I think when you draft him, you know, I'm drafting him low enough where I don't know if I'll have him at first or I'll have him in the outfield. I like the dual eligibility as well. It's a lot easier to replace a guy that gets hurt in the 12th, 13th, 14th round. I don't know about easier. I mean, it's just as easy to replace Mike Trout, but it's just the player isn't as good. So you get, you know, the drop-off isn't as much for a replacement in that round as it is in earlier rounds. So I want the upside. I want Myers in my lineup when the Reds are at home.
So you think he has a little, you know, Brandon Drury type path this year where he
I think, you know, it's tough to make the comparisons of that nature, but I think there's still some stuff left in Myers' bat. It's all about the health. Last year, 713 OPS, but he didn't run so much, but he had some knick-knack things, didn't even play half a season. So to me, I'm betting more on the health than the skills. I think if he plays, I think if he's healthy, he will play pretty well.
Yeah, I think best case scenario for a guy like Will Myers is he plays well and gets flipped. I think that's, you know, he's been open about, you know, why he signed with Cincinnati. He wants to get those numbers boosted up in Great American Small Park and kind of revitalize his career a little bit.
Right.
But then you have to wonder, you know, where does he end up? How much does he play with another team?
But if he plays well enough to merit getting flipped,
yeah,
you know, I mean, I will, you know, recognize that. And by the time July 31st or whenever the trade deadline is this year, early August, whenever it is, I will have a plan B. You know, if I don't feel Myers will be playing regularly or, you know, et cetera, I will have a contingency ready to go. And, hey, there's every chance, not every chance, but there's a team. What if he gets moved to a team where he's still hitting well and it's a more runs because it's a better lineup than the Reds? It could help him. We'll see.
It's a good point that if he's flipped at the deadline, he's probably already hit well enough to justify your spot, honestly. But I do worry about that with guys like him and like Crone. Like, do I want to draft Crone thinking he's probably going to end up somewhere outside of Coors?
I think he's
there. Maybe I'm thinking too big picture.
Well, they signed him to the contract. Mm-hmm. I don't think if they hadn't signed CJ Crone to the contract, I'd be a little bit concerned. But I think we're okay with Crone. Who knows? I'm trying to remember. Is there someone breathing down his neck as far as? As far as a backup goes, I don't think so.
Not really.
Michael Togliatti is listed, but I don't think any of their minor leaguers are going to come up. So unless they want to move Nolan Jones over to first, which I doubt, I think he's pretty safe.
I suppose the Rockies are notoriously hard-headed about trying to compete, too. So maybe they don't trade him, but that's just something that's been in the back of my mind with Crone.
I mean, yeah, I guess Chris Bryant, and yes, if you hear that sound, it is what you think it is. Chris Bryant could move to first, and one of the outfielders, young outfielders, could move in.
Yeah, we could see Veen this year, maybe.
Yeah, and then, you know, and so sure, there's a pathway. I mean, if someone offers the Rockies a decent amount for Crone, I could see it, but I don't think it's going to prevent me from drafting him.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational in a second, but let's first throw to a quick word from our Blue Wire sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we are back on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. The only podcast you're going to hear this week, I think, with two overall TGFBI winners. I did it in 2018. Why were you 2019? Were you the next year?
Yeah, unless Tanner interviews Kevin, I think we're safe.
Yeah, it's an honor, you know, and thanks to Justin Mason for giving us this platform to play and so much to talk about throughout the year with TGFBI. It's a great competition. It sounds like you guys are making good headway in your draft. We're stuck in the 12th round of my draft, but you guys getting pretty far?
Again, apologize for the noise. There's an open door near me, and I'm not sure what you're hearing or not. We have just begun the 20th round. I just made my 20th round pick.
Nice. And who was it?
It was, drum roll please, Sean Manaea, my ninth pitcher, my sixth starter, which means I have three closers, and it's a mixed league. So, who does he have? But yeah, he's my sixth starter.
Sean Manaea was a Driveline guy, right? He went to Driveline.
Yeah. I like the park. I like the streaming aspect of it. He's due for a bounce back. But yeah, I teased it. I mentioned on the radio earlier about Scott Barlow being kind of the last available full-time closer, and I actually got him in the ninth round of TGFBI, followed up with Andres Munoz with the plan on getting Seawald, but Seawald went a little earlier than I was willing to double tap or, you know, double ding the Seattle bullpen. So I took a chance, and I'll admit it was partially on some information from our buddy Dean Peterson, who follows the White Sox. I got some information because we're covering the White Sox in a panel today at First Pitch where we're talking about the new managers. So I sent Dean some questions about the White Sox, sent Craig Mish questions about the Marlins to get some stuff. So I have approximately 3 hours to act on that information before I make it public. And he thinks Graveman will be the guy at the beginning, so I get Kendall Graveman.
I see. I was kind of wondering how this tied back to the White Sox, but okay.
Yeah, I got Kendall Graveman as my I circuitous route, but I'll get you there. I'll get there.
No, you should. I was looking at your tweet from March 1st, and I didn't see Graveman.
So Graveman was my 17th rounder. So it is an overall competition, and I think you do need some saves. The year that I took it down, I got Kirby Yates, who was he ended up being the best closer, but he was like a 15th or 16th rounder, which is what you need to do in these leagues in order to win the overall. So that's, I'm kind of hoping again, maybe, you know, I hope Leon Hendricks is back, you know, March, May 1st, and that I have to drop Graveman just because. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen, and Munoz versus Seawald. I don't know, and we'll see what Barlow does. So we'll see.
The year I won it, I had Blake Treinen somewhat late. And so, yeah, it is important to hit on one of those guys. And I think I got Munoz, too, in my draft, 10th round, just like you did. I feel like he's the guy, maybe he's going a little bit higher than Treinen was. It might have been around the same spot. This is a guy who does have the skills to be the number one closer. Now, maybe he does have to continue sharing it with Seawald. But that team's going to be pretty good. And if Munoz gets to like 25 to 30 saves, I mean, maybe not number one, but a top five type of closer.
Yeah, I think, and I don't think we know the answer to this yet. I think we know, but I don't know that we know. Seattle used the committee approach because they had to. And then it was just so darn successful. So, you know, they traded for Munoz. They picked up Ken Giles. It sounded like they were looking for a closer, but they just made the best of a situation when they didn't have him. And now that Munoz is healthy and off season, you know, there's a chance that Seawall, I mean, he's not going to get zero saves. But like you said, there's a chance Munoz does get two out of three or whatever it might be. And it's not a halvesy sort of thing. And the ancillary strikeouts and the ratio should be fine. So I think he's kind of like because I took him out to Barlow, who's my cutoff line. To me, he's the top questionable closer.
Yeah, I feel like Munoz and like Pete Fairbanks were those guys in that range that I really liked. Fairbanks is getting a little pricey now.
He went. He was the guy. I wasn't thinking about Graveman. Yeah. But he was the guy I wanted as my next, you know, my third. But like you just mentioned, he went up. He went pretty good, pretty high.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like both those guys as guys who could, you know, surge and finish well ahead of where they were taken. But we'll see. It is important to hit on one of those guys, but maybe priced out on Fairbanks and drafts.
Fairbanks went the 12th.
Okay. I think he went – let me see where he went in mine. He went in the 9th in my draft.
Okay, well, that's really – yeah, because I had taken – having taken Barlow and Munoz in the 9th and 10th, I wanted to get back to hitting. So I wasn't ready to take a third closer at that point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Munoz versus Fairbanks straight up is kind of interesting. I think I'd take Fairbanks – but I'd like to grab both of those guys, honestly, if I can. Like, kind of hard to spend 9-10 on closers, but if you don't draft one earlier, maybe that's too solid a fallback option.
Yeah, right. You have to understand the mindset of the thinking that led up to that point. And I don't know. It wasn't designed, but I didn't think Munoz would get back, and I did want a second somewhat decent closer. And looking at who went in between, okay, Joanne Duran went in between. I got to believe Munoz would have gone. Alexis Diaz went. Actually, I think you can put him in that group, the same group, and then just use not taking Diaz based on the team, although there's some talk that he could be more of a multi-inning guy as well. But I think when they say multi-inning, I think they mean eighth and ninth, not seventh and eighth. Well, we'll see.
The stolen base category is always a tough piece of the puzzle to put together. I drafted Julio Rodriguez, you know, first with my first round pick, second overall. And then I grabbed Corbin Carroll in the fifth, got Ahmed Rosario. But I'm still trying to chip away at steals. How did you tackle that category?
Probably not as well as I should have. So I started with Freeman and Devers. So I got like four. And, you know, maybe I have eight. I don't know. We'll see what Freeman does. Maybe he's good for 10. Anyway, I may have pushed Cedric Mullins up a little bit in the fourth round, but I got Cedric Mullins. I got Dansby Swanson a couple rounds later, who wasn't because of steals. I just happen to like. But my dice throw or dart throw, if you will, on steals in the 13th, C.J. Abrams. To talk about him leading off. That's kind of my, if I do well, it's going to be because C.J. Abrams did pretty good too. And that's about all I've got right now. I mentioned Will Myers. I really, really like Astoria Ruiz as a luxury steals item, not as a, I need him to steal in order to meet my number sort of guy. And I think he is in the process of going from the luxury range to the Miles Straw range, where he's the guy that people are going to take if they feel they're short on steals. And I was kind of bummed he went a little earlier than I was willing to go. It's his OVP in the minors was fantastic, Astoria Ruiz. It hasn't translated yet, but it's only been like 30 games. Mm-hmm. And FanGraph translations aren't very promising. But if he translates that OBP anywhere close to the minor leagues, Ruiz is going to steal 50 bases. And he's going to do
it. He stole 80-some, right?
Yeah. So, again, the difference between I don't want to say, all right, I've got Ruiz's 50. I only need 70 more. I want to say I have 110. And Ruiz's 50 could win me the league, you know?
Yeah, Story Ruiz is a really interesting X factor right now. They brought in J.J. Blade, who I saw was starting over in center, at least early on in the spring.
Yep.
A lot more draft pedigree with a guy like Blade, but I think they should give both these guys plenty of playing time. It's the land of opportunity. They got to see what they have in these guys.
So Ruiz
those OBP skills you mentioned with Ruiz are interesting.
Yeah. He went in the 16th. Is that too high for you?
Story Ruiz, maybe if you're in a tough spot with steals,
yeah,
that seems like a little aggressive. But.
Yeah, I think that's around where you can think about taking the chance. Now, I was on the road, and I'm not going to use this as an excuse, but I had a pre-draft, and I put Austin Hayes in, and that's who I got. Had I been, you know, making the pick live or, you know, thinking about it, et cetera, I may have taken Ruiz to make sure I get him at that point. But I'm, you know, no crying over spilt milk. I didn't get him. I'm not unhappy at all with Austin Hayes. Kind of happy about it. But that would have been my chance to get Ruiz.
He'll definitely be a player to keep an eye on and drafts to come. If he's looking like he has playing time, that speed's going to really tantalize and somebody's going to jump him aggressively. Well, Todd, let's switch gears here a little bit and get into our underdog best ball segment of the week. Tough one this week, at least for me to come up with. Our top five do not draft players on Underdog. By the way, with Underdog, definitely be sure to use promo code RWMLB. They'll not only double your initial deposit up to $100, but you also get 6 months of RotoWire for free. So really a heck of a deal. And I'm having a lot of fun playing on there. Again, promo code RWMLB. But the guys I'm not ending up with, not drafting on Underdog, really are, you know, contest specific. A lot of these guys getting pushed up because of the format. Like a guy like Kyle Schwarber, who's number one on my list, ADP 16.2 on Underdog. That's one that maybe it's a disconnect between Roto and this points league, but and the outfield madness that we've talked about. But 16 for Kyle Schwarber seems way too high, even in a points format where he's not docked for the low average. This feels one where people are chasing the outfield position a little too much after that first tier and pushing Kyle Schwarber up more than he deserves.
I get him ranked 13th overall.
For so best ball.
Yeah, in this format, using the outfield replacement, blah, 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 Schwarber is my 13th overall. Now, I usually haven't gotten him, but I can see where it's coming from. I'm going to be honest. I did not do picking my players because you got me on the road and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, traveling this week. So I'm going to do I'm going to do more about Phil. You know, you said do not draft. I'm going to be more of a complete the following sentence. Do not draft. So my first do not draft is, do not draft your third infielder before you have at least 3 outfielders and 3 pitchers.
Okay. That's a little, it's just more that I have to type down, but that's a good way to go about it. So wait, I got that down so that people can
just put weight on infield.
Yeah. It's crazy. The infielders that are still sitting around late. And with that in mind, kind of leads into my next guy, Bobby Witt Jr., ADP 32. You don't need steals to compete in the category. I wonder exactly how valuable the bat will be in this points format. And ADP of 32 with guys like Real Muto hanging around late, all these great infielders late, I feel like Bobby Witt's honestly kind of a bust pick at 32 in this format.
For sure. I think I agree with you there because I have him 48th overall. So there,
below.
I will agree as far as that goes. I'm going to come up with some players just because, but my next, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, do not draft anybody who's hurt. You only get 10 active players and you get 20 spots. You're going to get players that are hurt. And there's no pickups.
No pickups.
People are taking Bryce Harper. All right, you know what? There's my do not draft. Do not draft Bryce Harper. And I don't know if he's on your list or not.
No, he was not on my list. Bryce Harper.
People, what they're saying, because, and this is a cut line sort of format, and where after a certain time, the top two teams make it, and then they keep cutting them down. So what people are in their glory minds are saying, if I can get to the playoffs and then Bryce Harper comes back, I'm going to win it. I want to get there first. And I don't think – this is my first in the format, so maybe that is the way to go. But I don't believe it is, at least from where I'm sitting, which right now is in West Palm Beach behind this big orange thing. But so I'm not drafting Bryce Harper because I think that spot's too valuable. I want to get to the playoffs. And who's to say that he's going to carry you anyway? So do not draft Bryce Harper.
I like that one too. I considered him for my list because I'm with you. Like, he's not going to give you anything over the first 3 months. That's just a dead roster spot through the first prelim stages of the contest. So I'm with you there. And I actually have two outfielders next up on my list. Adolis Garcia at 43 on Underdog. He really, as a do not draft player for me, carries over to Roto as well. Just don't get it. I mean, he's played well the past few years. Don't get me wrong. But that's been despite some really shaky plate skills that I think leave him open to some significant downside. So I have him on my do not draft at 43 on Underdog. And then the other outfielder, Luis Robert, ADP 48.8 on Underdog. I mentioned this to Jeff and he pushed back, and it really isn't quite getting to Mondesi levels, but starting to get a little, with all the missed time from Luis Robert, starting to get a little Mondesi vibe with the missed time anyway. And at that price point, I just think it's too steep.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you say Mondesi, I think Byron Buxton, although maybe Buxton's too good of a talent for Robert. But I think Robert's talent for a while was in that Buxton range. But I'm with you as far as that goes. Now, I actually had a player. All right, so Musgrove fits into the injured. So what I'm going to say is I'm going to use Yu Darvish. And it's more about and I know that you don't get a whole ton of two-start weeks. But I don't – I'm going to shy away from the rotations that have six-man rotations because that reduces the ability to get a two-start week even further. Mm-hmm. And it's those two-start weeks that really bump up your points when you only got three pitchers. And the way I play is I want my first two pitchers in there every week, and I'm looking for a guy to spike in that third week. So I need the two starts. And San Diego and some other teams just aren't getting as good as Darvish is. It's going to be, he's just not going to get two. If you get 32 starts in 26 weeks, you're only looking at six or seven two-start weeks the way things play out. And then you're down to four, if that, with six-man rotations. So Darvish is, I'm going to say Darvish as my representative for pitchers on staffs with six-man rotations.
Nice. My final do not draft player on Underdog for this year is Hunter Green, and this pains me to say as a Reds fan. But at ADP 91, that's even higher than he's going in most drafts I see. So much working against the guy. Bad park to pitch in, brutal park to pitch in, frankly. I mean, it's reaching Coors levels. A Great American small park in terms of runs scored. Bad team, two-pitch guy. And as great as that fastball is, if hitters are sitting on it, they'll poke it out of that park. So Hunter Green is a guy that, with the talent, I think people are chasing the upside, but I think it'll be a year or two more before it really comes together in full for Hunter Green.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's nice to hear you, be non-biased about the Reds. When you said
bias in the other direction.
Yeah.
Negative bias.
When I hear you said Green, I'm thinking Riley Green, who's actually on my I like this guy list. And I'm going to go with a guy, and it has nothing. I was trying to think of guys inherent to underdog strategy. So I'm a little out of my element. I'm not in my room. I'm like in a big hallway here, so I'm a little slower today. I
appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, just a little. You know, but anyway, I'm going to use a guy that I'm going to say Spencer Strider.
Okay.
And I kind of alluded to my – I want two pitchers who I expect to be in my lineup every week. When I'm at 12 in this thing, I got Burns and Cole like twice. So I want my two pitchers really early. It doesn't have to be Burns and Cole. And then my third pitcher, I'm drafting six pitchers total. I was at seven. I'm drafting six pitchers total. I want one of those four to just pop in that week. To me, with Strider's being drafted, he's being counted on every week. And I don't know how many innings he's going to get. And I think the innings going to be tempered. So the same way as in Roto, the same reason here, I don't see him getting the innings commensurate with his draft price.
Hey, that's fair. I know we differ on Strider, but you make a lot of good points. So my top five do not draft on underdog: Kyle Schwarber, Bobby Witt Jr., Adolis Garcia, Luis Robert, and Hunter Green. And Todd's do not draft your third infielder before you have at least three outfielders and three pitchers. Do not draft anybody who's hurt, including Bryce Harper. Do not draft Yu Darvish, and then Spencer Strider. Well, great stuff, Todd. That'll do it for the underdog best ball segment today. And before we transition back to TGFBI talk, I want to bring you a quick word from Fantrax. Fantrax is the most customizable fantasy platform in the industry, offering the greatest fantasy experience for your dynasty, keeper, redraft, and best ball leagues. Coming from another service, Fantrax makes it super easy. If you're fed up with your commish service, there's really only one place to go, and that's Fantrax. You can import any of your current leagues and customize if needed. They're just a quick email away from anything you need adjusted. Fantrax offers the most in-depth player pool in the industry, including minor league players. Do you need a customizable commissioner service for your fantasy league? Fantrax offers more customization than any other platform, and the best part of it, it's all free. Also, if you're a Vlad Jr. Mark like myself, you can sign up today and be entered to win an official MLB signed jersey from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Simply go to Fantrax.com/RotoWire and sign up today. That's Fantrax.com/RotoWire. Fantrax, the home of fantasy sports. So as we wrap things up today, Todd, I wanted to just get to a few more of our draft picks here in TGFBI. How did you address the catcher position?
Real quick, before we – I don't mean to interrupt, not something to interrupt, but I'm looking on Twitter. The Red Sox are shifting on Joey Gallo, using the left fielder and the rover position in right field, and leaving left field completely open. Now, keeping in mind that they play – and this is Will Middlebrooks pointing this out, otherwise known as Jenny Dell's husband – with the short left field wall, worst case scenario is, you know, it's like a double regardless. So this is why you can still do interesting defensive alignments within the rules. The four infielders are playing where they're supposed to be, but there's literally the left fielders in right field. I was wondering, I figured Joe Maddon, but he's not at another team, would be the first to do something like this. It's interesting that it's Alex Cora. We'll see if he does it in the game or whether he's just practicing with it in spring training, because they're not at JetBlue. They're not at JetBlue. They're on the road. They must be in Minnesota's home park. That's interesting. But as far as catchers go, speaking of Minnesota, I'm only halfway done with my catchers. I did not want to wait as long as I did, but I do have one guy that I am very much interested in as a late pick, so I didn't get too worried about it. I got Christian Vasquez, I think maybe the 19th round, which I like that. I'm going to take a shot with my second catcher, and I don't know that anybody's listening. I don't know how long I'm going to wait. Call me a homer, a Red Sox homer, if you will, but I think it's more about just being aware of than it is being a homer at this point. I think Jorge Alfaro, if he doesn't win the job, is going to get a significant portion of the Red Sox catching job. He can hit. And so I'm
on roster invitee, right?
Yeah, exactly. From San Diego. I'm going to draft him as my second catcher. And if he doesn't work out, I will find somebody else. But I'm going to take a shot at Alfaro. I don't know how long I'm going to go with him or how long I'm going to wait. But I'm going to take Alfaro. See, I am drafting with Ray Murphy, who may or may not have the same thoughts because he's a local guy from Boston. I will check to see what he's got on catchers. He only has one. He only has Salvador Perez, which does not bode well for me because maybe he's thinking the same thing that I am. So if you're my TGFBI league and Ray's clock runs out, it's not because I put him in a closet.
Well, we had an interesting note on Alfaro just yesterday that he has a upward mobility clause in his contract with
yes.
Boston. So he would be allowed to sign with a major league or a major league deal elsewhere if Boston
yes.
doesn't plan to have him on the roster by March 25th. So either way, it sounds like he'll be in the majors.
Yep.
Right. So yeah, that's a sneaky one. I like that. I was, you know, I paid up a little bit more, at least for my first catcher. I haven't drafted my second yet, but I got Wilson Contreras in the seventh round. Is he a guy you're in on, or is that kind of a new fate or familiar face, new place you might worry about with the big contract?
Is not out on an answer? I mean, I don't know. I'm not out on him.
You're agnostic.
I'm not saying, oh, the park. I'm not, you know, he's not on my do not draft list. I don't know, you know, I don't know that I'm targeting him, if you will. And I hate to say that, you know, you let the draft come to you. But I'm not going out of my way to get him, but I'm not avoiding him either.
Yeah, I'm going to have to figure out what to do with that second spot. But, you know, as we've talked about before, I'm just a little bit more willing to pay up at the catcher position this year because past the most recent years anyway, man, I've found it really hard to have the 14 best hitters over the course of a full season when you got two stinkers at the,
catcher position. I'm
not saying you have stinkers at the
catcher. No. I wanted to draft up a little bit. It just never presented itself. And again, I don't want to use this as an excuse, but when you're traveling, you know, you preset your, I think I want an outfielder and a pitcher in this turn. You set them, but based on the flow, maybe, you know, oh, geez, now I better take my catchers now. You know, I don't know that I would have done a thing different. I'm not saying I would have, but it's a little bit of a, and this is, you know, to be honest with you, Clay, this is why I didn't do the TGFBI the first year that you won it, because yeah. I knew I was traveling and it was on a different platform. And they don't, the pre-draft platform is not as robust. You can only do one round at a time. And here you can do multiple rounds and have the queues be different. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've been doing in order to keep it, you know. So
yeah, I love how you can set a queue just for each specific round. That's so nice on NFBC.
Yeah. So anyway, so looking at my tiers, I just mentioned I've been doing my tiers. I called in last year's players and it, you know, where they are on the tier. I had to raise up the players. Almost everybody had to go up like a whole tier. That just, but by that I mean they're just better. They were ranked higher this year in the aggregate.
Yeah, it's still a very thin position, but there are some good young players coming in at the catcher position.
Yeah.
Still very tricky one to figure out.
Yeah.
Now, Todd, you gave away a guy that you're hoping to get later on, and I'll give away a guy that I'm desperately hoping to get here, maybe with my next pick even. Let me jot this timestamp down for our guy, Alan. Maybe one of the best values on the entire board right now for me, and that's JD Martinez. Now, on Underdog, like we discussed earlier, we talked about Underdog. There, JD's lumped in with the outfielders, so he's all the more appealing. UT only in traditional drafts, but look, I'm in the 12th round right now. I would like to get JD at 179, honestly. I mean, even as UT only, I think, consider where he was drafted last year. The year he had was not that bad. He's now with the Dodgers, who have tremendous coaching and development staffs, and he's with his original hitting coach that fueled the breakout initially with Detroit. So I just think everything points to a nice bounce back. And at that cost, yeah, I'm thinking JD's one of the top values on the hitting side. I know you hate that term.
Yeah, well, market values, well, you know, maybe if we put it that way, you know, relative to the market.
Sure.
He went in the 13th to Jen Piacenti in this league, and with
watch out for her, she might take down the overall. Honestly,
she's in my league. Be careful. No, Jen's a great player. Yeah. And looking at the team, no, she's not going to win. No, I'm just kidding. Now I forget what I was going to say. Oh yeah, as far as Martinez and the utility goes, I'm a lot more amenable to doing that in a league with Fab. Because you do it in a draft and hold, and inevitably you're looking at three corner infielders on your bench that are better than, you know, half of the play, you know, middle in, you know, or vice versa. You have less flexibility to get the better players in there. I know you can sit the utility if he's not very good, but if you drafted, you know, Martinez, he's probably better, you know, than the backups. Point being, I like, without being able to maneuver my roster with Fab to make it all work, I don't like to do the utility thing. But in this league, yes, you take the value. You take the drop there, and you make the rest with multiple position eligibility players, or just being active in the Fab market and shaping your roster so that you can keep it as strong as possible without using that spot.
In my TGFBI draft, I mentioned I got Julio. So, yeah, that's a nice power source. But then Corey Seager, Corbin Carroll, Wilson Contreras, Amed Rosario. I got Anthony Santander to make up for power. I still feel like I need to a little bit. And I feel like JD can do that. Most projection systems have him around 20 homers. But I had 28 in 2021. I guess maybe I'm kind of just hoping that he can push up closer to 30.
The Dodger Stadium is better for power for him than Fenway Park.
Really?
So I think I don't remember what my number is on Martinez, but I'm pretty sure it's closer to 30. If it's over under 25, I'm pretty sure I'm taking the over. And I think that's what you want, right? And last year, it was like Jose Abreu in that he pounded the ball, but he didn't lift the ball. So the overall
was a strange drop in over the fence power.
Yeah. But I don't think he's lost it. Mm. So for a lot of the reasons that you just talked about, I don't remember that you mentioning Mookie Betts, but I don't think it hurts that he's back on a team with Mookie and comfortable and all that kind of stuff. So what do I have? I have 26 homers for Martinez. So I guess I would take the over on 25.
Nice. That's good for me to hear, because I'm going to have a lot invested in JD this year. And yeah, I just think there's still something there. Maybe there is a newfound comfort level there. Sure. Now with his old hitting coach, and yeah, maybe Mookie there.
Why not?
I'm excited to see what JD can do. And plus, they already made it clear that he's going to be DHing every day at the expense of some Will Smith starts. So the fact that they're already saying, look, you're our everyday DH. We paid you $10 million to come in and DH.
Yeah, and it's not like Will Smith can go play first base either.
Can he?
No, well, they got a guy named Freddie Freeman
there. Oh, yeah, they got a guy named Freddie Freeman.
He's missed 10 games in the past 4 years.
Yeah, I know they said maybe Will Smith catches a little bit more to balance things out, but they said that Will Smith's going to get fewer DH starts. So it seems like they're dead set on Martinez being a key anchor in that lineup.
Yep.
For what projects to be one of the best teams in baseball again, let's not forget.
Well, take a look at their lineup. They're going to need JD.
Yeah, I think they're banking on a big rebound from JD. And if the Dodgers are banking on it and betting on it, I'm going to bet on it. Not in all cases, but that is a appeal to authority that I will make. Todd, great stuff. Really want to thank you again for doing this on location, you know, traveling, but you still made time for us. Thanks, man. Anything else on your mind today as we wrap things up?
Baseball's on my mind. Now we're having some people are starting to come in. So
good timing to wrap up.
Why don't we just sign her off, and I'll go head over to the First Pitch Forum, check out Labor Tonight on SiriusXM, and talk about my labor team next week, doing drafting AL on Saturday night.
Good luck. And, yeah, Jeff Erickson's on the call tonight for the NL Labor. And good luck to you and James and everybody. Jason Collette, tomorrow you'll be at each other's throats, and I'm looking forward to seeing who you guys battle over. A reminder that we are sponsored by Fantrax and Underdog Fantasy. We'll be back again, Todd and I, next Friday. Hope you'll join us on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing. But you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is four missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour 3-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour Foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.